movies and booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
We're joined once again, I'm delighted to say, by Issa McCarthy and Tomás Clancy. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon,
Hi, Sean. How are you?
Not too bad. So, Tomás, where are you going to be bringing us to today?
We are going to be flying south to the south of France, to Provence, of course. But this time we're going to go to an unfamiliar place, to a bit that's really to...
Try not to put your jumper on when you're talking at the same time. Is that not you?
I think that might be Esther's jumper, he says.
Right, okay, yes, Esther. Keep her clothes on, Esther. Right, sorry, Tomás.
It's okay. We're heading over to the Bouches du Rhône, to the marshes, and to the countryside that Van Gogh spent a lot of his time in around Arles, and a place called Saint-Rémy and Les Baux de Provence. And there's two sisters making beautiful wine. They're two sisters who are both winemakers, and they run this absolutely gorgeous estate, which has been painted by Van Gogh, written about by Simone de Beauvoir, and, well, less interesting, Nostradamus, naturally enough, has said something about it. But I think he said something about absolutely everything. If you throw a stick at it and read backwards for five letters, you can actually find something along those lines. But they make a beautiful white wine down there that is it's very extraordinary, very expensive, because this place called Saint-Rémy de Provence, which is, I would say, about 100... shall we say about an hour's drive north of Marseille and into the left, into the west, so to speak. There's a place called Saint-Rémy de Provence, which is like it's the summer retreat for people from Monaco. So it's when Monaco becomes a bit too sort of downmarket. That's when you find the people of Monaco heading inland to find a cool, suave and sophisticated place to do a bit of their shopping. And this is Saint-Rémy de Provence. It's also where Prince Rainier and several other of the royal marriages actually took place. So they didn't take place in Monaco as such. They had they had a civil service there, but they had the big religious service in Saint-Rémy de Provence. So we're going to have a look at that. And it's a quite extraordinary, very interesting wine, not too expensive either. And what we're looking at is both of the wines today. We're looking at... I hear movement again.
Yes, okay. I think actually Esther's grown wings in the intervening period. That's what it sounds like. And she's just fluttering them lightly.
I'm sorry, excellent. I'm here with a towel over my head to try and get to reduce the echo. But
okay,
it's
all right.
So
well.
My apologies. The second... the
I'm
butterfly,
not taking my clothes off, honest.
The butterfly, Esther's butterfly, ascends from Provence and heads over to the highlands of Spain for our second wine, to Ribera del Duero and to the royal family of Spain and their little getaway north of Madrid. So both of these wines are wines about escaping and getting away to these places where they're rare, they're small production, but we get them here. They're not too dear because they're not made in an expensive manner. It's just that they have... they have rarity because of where they're located. And the people in Ireland who have been, we've got connections to these people, and we've managed to get over and hog a few cases here and there for them, from them, and we've managed to get them here. Both of the wines today also, and I think it's something we probably should concentrate on going forward, are from wine shops that have brought in new and brilliant policies for the pandemic problems that we have now of zero contact sales. Mm. So Terroirs, for example, is one of our first ones in Donnybrook. Whelehan's out in Loughlinstown would be another one. And both of them are operating the very fine service where you can ring and you can say what wine you'd like after looking at their website. And you can ring them and tell them you'd like a bottle of this or six bottles of that or a case of that. And they will give you, they'll take the charge over the phone. You will then drive up in an appointed time. They'll come out. Wiped hands, gloves, the whole thing, put the wine into the back of the boot, close the lid, wipe it again, dispose of the gloves, and off you go. A completely zero contact sort of method of realty and exchange, and very ingenious for both of them. Restaurants are doing it, and now the wine shops are doing it as well.
Someone's texting in to say I'm having a Mexican night because, you know, lockdown. I'm going to make margaritas or something bitter and strong. I know wine is Tomas's bag, but does he have any special cocktail recipes up his sleeve?
Well, for margaritas, they're out there. I wouldn't dream of trying to overwhelm you with that. But I actually think that people should come back from margaritas and start drinking. Look at the base material itself. There's absolutely, you know, fabulous forms of all kinds of tequilas and rums that are beautiful on their own, and we kind of spoil them when we put all of the extra elements that we bring to them to try and denude them of their sourness. The sourness, it's like somebody says, you know, goes to the Loire and says, do you know all this this Sancerre, it's very bitter. Can we shove a bit of lemonade into it, you know, and then try it with the fish, you know? So we're kind of doing that. Bartenders all over the world have spent many decades trying to make this appealable to people. But in fact, we're now mostly into listening to the flavour, the authentic flavour of the guave and the different types of tequilas that are out there. You've got, you know, I mean, again, tequila is an expression of the soil and terroir of Mexico and southern states in the United States, just as much as grapes are. And there are people who are experts at tequila tasting, and I've been out with one or two of them, and they can bring you through. This one is from a soil that is limestone. This, you can see the volcanic sort of impact on this and so forth. So I would, you know, why not do something really new, abandon the cocktail thing, bring in the tequilas themselves and have a go.
I must agree with that. Only relatively recently did I discover that. Now you have to spend a few bob, I suppose, but a good tequila is—it's like a good whiskey. It's like a good brandy. It's you know, a lovely drink by itself. It really is.
It really is. And our friend, the actor. He was in Ocean's 11.
George Clooney,
the main guy. George Clooney.
Yeah.
Made himself, a billion out of this, you know, literally an actual billion out of making a beautiful tequila, which he then sold happily to a large drinks company. And so he's, you know, he's really the god of tequila at the moment. And as a result of that, there isn't anyone in Hollywood that doesn't want their own tequila and see if they can flog it very quickly.
Now, our hashtag, by the way, it's already the top trend in Ireland, has been for quite some time. It is sinful movies. That's because of the item we did of the drive-through confession the other days. And I'm pleased to say as well, after many years, that this one fits. No Country for Bold Men. It fits that film perfectly after numerous attempts by people to try and crowbar that film title into whatever the theme is this week. So what are we going to be talking about this week, Esther?
We are going to be talking about Four Kids and It, which is launching on Sky Cinema and Now TV today. It's a new feature. It's set in Cornwall, but it was actually shot on location on the beaches of County Wicklow and County Wexford.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's one of it's a growing number of productions, actually, that are set in the UK, but actually shot in Ireland because... you know, it's become quite expensive to film in the UK. And if you're moving from location to location, it's a bigger country. So it can be logistically more challenging. Plus, I think Irish crews have just got a reputation for being one of the best crews in the English speaking world. So it's drawing a lot of inward production in that regard. Spot Carrick Clough doubling for Cornwall in this film.
Right. OK. And the other one is Free Solo. What's that about?
Oh my God. Yeah, this is about this absolute lunatic by the name of Alex Honnold, a brilliant climber who decides that he's going to scale a mountain, a rock really. It's almost a kilometre high, called El Capitan. It's a notorious part of the Sierra Nevada in the US, in California. And he's going to do this without any ropes. He's just going to bring his bag of chalk and his bare hands and scale this mountain. A documentary team went along with him to see if he could do it. As someone who gets dizzy standing on my chair, I can't say this was an easy watch, but it's an extraordinary piece of filmmaking.
Yeah.
It was the best documentary winner at the Oscars last year. and it has dropped on Disney Plus. So when you're finished looking at all the Disney movies and the Pixars, and if you can wrestle Disney Plus from the hands of your children, there's a, you know, really good catalogue of work from National Geographic there, all their documentaries, and that's as part of the lineup here.
Right, okay. Did they leave a camera on the ground, just in case? And I wonder, did they tell him?
Yeah,
if you do fall, you see that big X there? Could you kind of aim for that? Because that'd be really great for our, be really great for our shot. Someone says they watched Vivarium last week upon Esther's recommendation. Well, I don't think I've slept right since. Such a trippy movie and scary. I think were we not in lockdown, I may have enjoyed it more. I can kind of see. I haven't seen it, but I kind of have been slightly loath to go to it for that reason. Someone else says, could your wine guru recommend a non-alcoholic red wine that actually tastes nice, if such a thing exists? Big fan of red wine, especially Chianti, Malbec, Merlot, but I've found that the non-alcoholic red wines I've tasted taste like Ribena. If he could recommend something that can be bought in the West or online too, would be great. Thanks, Emil. So, Tomas.
Well, basically, the answer is, of course, it's almost impossible. But the one that's doing it is Torres, Bodega Torres, their Naturo Red. And you'll find that in O'Brien's Wines and in lots of local independents. O'Brien's is obviously, at the moment, they've shut for a couple of days while they get their home transportation in order. They've been overwhelmed with people wanting to buy online and then come and pick it up or have it delivered. So I think apparently they look like they're going to be back in full flow in the next day or two. And so that's where to go and have a try, the Torres Naturo. The real problem is that you can get beautiful beers with no alcohol because you're making, you're brewing something out of the actual material, out of the grains. And then you're just not going on to the alcoholic stage. Whereas essentially, and then so that it becomes this new thing, this de-alcoholized beer. But wine is by its very definition, it has already two things. It has fruit juice, and it has, when you let it go further, wine. It becomes wine. So non-alcoholic wine, the best of it is great fruit juice. So I would honestly, you just abandon that, the look for a wine and start looking for non-alcoholic fruit juices that will come that way. And they don't really have them in this country, but all across anywhere that makes wine, when you go into a winery, you'll find that they've got their Merlot, and then they've got their Merlot fruit juice beside it. But so I would say I would push you really towards the Torres Naturo Red, and you can find that in all the big supermarkets as well. Or why not think about looking at apple juice as a splendid and highly distinctive thing in terms of, say, fruit juices that have low or no alcohol and that have real complexity to them. And there's lots of cocktails in that fruit area as well.
Right, so bring us to our first wine of the day, please, Tomas.
Oh, right, certainly. Mas de la Dame Cuvée Gourmande Blanc, 2015, is the name of the wine. So Mas de la Dame is the name of the winery. Cuvée Gourmande Blanc is the name of the actual wine itself. It's a white wine made 50-50 from Sémillon and Clairet. It's available. You can find it in, the first one we're looking at here is in Terroirs of Donnybrook. And as, what we're looking at here is they've got their zero contact method of reaching them. You'll find this on the website, I believe. You'll find it on the Terroirs website, but you'll find it on the Newstalk website as well. And you ring them up at their number, which is 01667 1311. And when you ring that, you will get, or do it through their website. They have free delivery for anyone in the locality of the shop. So that's Dublin 4 and Dublin 6. So from Rathmines and Ranelagh down to Sandy Mountain, Irish Town and Ringsend. So all of, and Donnybrook, all of those areas are covered with free coverage, free transportation. And as I said, it's all about this mechanism they got in place. And I think we'll see this increasingly over the next few weeks. I think most of the independents have gone this way. This wine is just a beautiful and interesting wine. And it's one of those ones where the two owners of the shop here, they spend time, they go off and spend sort of several weeks each year tracking down little estates and little wineries across France and Italy and Spain, everywhere. And they travelled up the road, I suppose, shall we say, the beautiful white dusty road of Provence, down from Saint-Rémy de Provence and towards Marseille. And they came to the village of Les Baux de Provence. Les Baux is the end of what's called a little strip of hills called Les Alpilles. And they look like teeth, and they look like white teeth coming up out of the ground. So there's always been this kind of mystical, strange thing that there's maybe some giant down there that's trying to close his mouth. And if you went into it, something terrible might happen. And up in these teeth, ceremonies of all kinds of wickedness went on for thousands, hundreds of thousands of years. And this is why Nostradamus spent a lot of time writing about it. It's rather strange. And then troglodyte buildings, basically people carved houses out of them and lived in this very mystical area where they thought it had access to the center of the world and where the gods lived. It didn't have that, but what it did have was incredibly complex and beautiful soils, because it represents the mouth or the delta of the Rhone River. So the Rhone River rises up in Switzerland, in the Alps, in Lac Léman, and travels well over 1,000 kilometers, way down to Marseille, which is the mouth that feeds out onto the Mediterranean. And when you're looking at the from on height, it looks like New Orleans, it looks like sort of Egypt. It has this big deltine kind of wash to it. The water is fabulously coloured because of the all the rich minerals that come down that are scraped out of the Alps, travel 1,000 miles and then get deposited near Marseille and around the Bouches du Rhône. And what you have then is it's very rich in salt. As a result of that, it's where the whole salt industry for France, they just go out there and they drain the salt out of the grounds. It's very marshy, and they have their own special white horses there. And the white horses of the marshes of this area are some of the last wild stallions and wild horses in Europe. So you can tell it's a really interesting location. It has been for a very long time. I hate to get into it because there's so much weirdness about this, but the basically Dan Brown has churned up a lot of this as well. I apologize already, Sean.
Yeah.
But just down the road from Les Baux de Provence, heading straight down to the coast, you come to a place called the Three Marys. And it's where essentially Jesus is supposed to have been brought by Mary, having been rescued from the cross, along with Mary Magdalene. So this is where you get all this stuff about the Magdalene and Mary living down in Provence. And this is why, the blood of Christ, this is where Nostradamus is talking about, the wine coming out of this particular piece of ground is so special and so interesting. Frankly, it's actually just rather beautiful, and it has a rather saline quality to it that you don't get in many of the white wines down there because of the heat. So this Claret and Semillon sort of blend is very strange. It has this kind of lime, like a lime marmalade kind of taste to it, but with a sort of a drizzle of honey at the back of it. So lime and honey, very strange. But on the nose, and this is because it's surrounded by all of these lavender fields, because this is where they make all the lavender of Provence, you get this deep, warm lavender smell on the nose, followed by this kind of strange limey, but sweet sort of wine that's coming out of it. And this white wine is rather extraordinary. The bottle is a squat 16th century bottle, because they've been bottling this wine down there since that period, and they haven't changed. They've been very remote and cut off from most of the world. And this is just an extraordinary, beautiful wine. It's a €17.95 now, down from its normal price of around €20. Mm. So hopefully that might encourage people to have a little look at it and have a bottle and try it. Beautiful chilled right now. And again, it works really well with soft cheeses and things that you don't, there's not too much cooking to it. It works. It's also very rather well with sort of with small, fish dishes. That's what they spend a lot of time eating, but for a sort of fresh river dishes. So cockles and a bit of the sea as well, cockles and mussels and a glass of this, quite extraordinary.
Oh, it sounds absolutely, absolutely beautiful. We do have a hashtag, of course. It is Sinful Movies, Nipple Clamping Miss Daisy, for instance. Esther, which film would you like to talk about first?
Let's do Four Kids in It.
Okay, Four Kids in It after this.
She's hurting me.
Did it just speak?
Speak? Yeah, was angry shouting. If I was going to speak, I would have said something like, oh, what's that? Fine, you got me. What do you want?
My sister's shoe.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You stole it right off her foot.
Anything that touches this beach is an offering to the Samiad.
Samiad?
Yes, hello. I'll take most offerings, so I'm not fussy.
I know this. This is from my book, Five Children and It. The kids, they find this thing, and it gives them wishes.
One a day, but nothing longer than a sentence. But you don't want to wish. They never work out. There's consequences. Something unfortunate happens, you blame me, I get a bad name. Wishes are bad news.
That's Four Kids and It. That's currently running on Sky. There was a kind of a weird noise in the background of that clip that isn't in the actual film. I hasten to add, so some sort of, I don't know, something weird happened to that clip. Anyway, Esther, it's kind of like there's a touch of the Brady Bunch about it, in the sense there's two families coming together.
Yes, absolutely. And it's quite meta, this one, because it's based on a novel by Jacqueline Wilson called Four Children and It. Which was in itself based on a book by E. Nesbitt from 1902 called Five Children in It. So this is an adaptation of the adaptation, I guess. And, you know, the Brady Bunch stuff's very interesting because what Jacqueline Wilson has always done so beautifully as a young person's and children's author is bring kind of real life problems into the storytelling. She would often address issues like parental, you know, family strife, parents breaking up, divorce, all of that sort of thing. It's always kind of loomed large in her novel, and this adaptation has that as well. So it's kind of a modern family situation, really, where Paula Patton, the American actor, and Matthew Good, the British actor, are this kind of new couple. She has two US kids, he's got two British kids, and they go on a family holiday for the very first time. What the children don't realise, they think their parents are pals.
I actually watched a bit of this morning, just coincidentally, and that was the bit that had me shouting at the television, that they thought this is a good time to throw this huge surprise on our kids when we arrive at the holiday house. Oh, by the way, I have a boyfriend stroke girlfriend, and here are their kids. Now get on with them.
Yeah, I know. It's a bit much for kids, all right. Not smoothly handled. And at the beginning of the holiday rather than the end as well, maybe not the best idea. But that's what happens, and the kids have to kind of suck it up. There's a lot of personality clashes, a lot of culture clashes, of course, as well, between the two groups of children. A very nice young cast actually performing really well here. I kind of liked it. But it doesn't go well when they reveal what's going on. But they're all struggling with their own growing pains as well. I think the first flushes of romance and stuff like that. But they initially don't hit it off. But things get much more interesting when, as the clip there alluded to, the children discover Samiad. It's kind of a magical creature, a very cute looking magical creature, which has the power to grant him extraordinary wishes. But there's a snag. The wish only lasts until the sun goes down. And in what is a lovely piece of casting, I think they've met, we often get airy fairy voice cast performances, but to take the famously distinctive and curmudgeonly voiced Michael Caine and have him perform that character, I think really gives an extra texture to the film as well, and leans into the Englishness of it all, I guess. So he is, the Samiad, the kids, like, their imaginations are the limit in terms of where they go and what they get to do. One of them has always wanted to be a successful pop star and gets to do that for a day. And even Cheryl pops up in a cameo as her badass manager. That's all going on. And then There's a lovely, again, a lovely little meta reference where they get to go back in time to 1902, which is when the movie Five Children in It, the original film before Jackie Lynn Wilson's, was set. So they get you get a whole period movie within a movie and a whole time travel element. And I think children are going to have a lot of fun with this. It's an absolute gift to parents this weekend, a new movie for kids. So, you know, there's nothing going on in cinemas at the moment. There's nowhere to bring the children. So to have a brand new film, a brand new story releasing today, I think it's going to be great for them.
And I must say, it's kind of a sweet and even old fashioned kind of movie.
It is.
No one comes from space or anything.
Yeah, it is. And it's about the power of imagination, I suppose. And then I think the adaptation is less successful at mining the growing pains. But, you know, they are there. They're referenced. They're part of the story. But sometimes I think that can feel a little bit flat. I think as a wish, you know, kind of the drama, I suppose, in itself and what the kids get to do, who, you know, where they get to go. And there's a nice proper baddie as well, a guy by the name of Tristan, who's played by Russell Brand. Who wants to use the Samiad for his own kind of nasty ends. And it's a nicely, Russell Brand can grate on me at the best of times, I think a lot of other people as well, but he's nicely cast here and he kind of brings a kind of comedic element, kind of a moustache twisting baddie, I suppose,
yes,
to play.
Yes.
And he's quite good in it, you know, it's good. I think if you really, really loved Jackie Lynn Wilson's novel, it doesn't quite have all the layers that her brilliant writing at its best can have. But as an original story and a new story geared towards, you know, a nice range of ages here as well. If you've got younger kids and 12-year-olds, I think they're all going to enjoy it because they're all represented. Their ages are represented on screen, you know.
Yeah, indeed.
Right up to adolescence.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice, this. It's sweet.
Melanie says, I recorded Rosie when it was on the telly a few weeks ago and watched it this morning. Oh, my God, what a desperately sad movie, but so on point for the times we live in with so much homelessness. Has Esther seen it? Incredible acting from Sarah Green. Incredible movie, she says.
Yeah, Rosie's fantastic. It was one of my favourite films of last year, actually. And not even favourite Irish films, favourite films full stop. But it's set in Dublin, of course. And it's a very European film in a way. It reminded me kind of the Dardenne brothers, who famously, you know, make films about social realism, but there's always an element of hope in it, I suppose. And that makes it just about watchable, I think, because it is a tough watch and you know, it's really a no room with the inn stuff. It follows this family over a couple of days, and Sarah Green is brilliant and ably supported by a very good Mo Dunford as well. And they have to just spend their days in their car trying to find somewhere to live that night. And it's a scathing account, I think, in its detail of the system, of a failure in the system as well.
Yeah. Lisa says she watched Four Kids in it this morning with the Bambinos, and they've spent the afternoon running around the house playing the movie out. No wizards or aliens. It encourages the kids to play. Loved it, says Lisa. So that's very good to hear. Someone says, I could write what I know about wine on a postage stamp, but I have a 1996 President Selection Cabernet Sauvignon from Wolf Blass, still in the original box, has been stored on its side and in the dark. Can you tell me anything about it, please?
It's very good, but it's not going to pay the mortgage off, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Given that, well stored, that Cabernet Sauvignon can last 30, 40 years. You know, it really was a very well-made wine. Wolf Blass was an actual man. Wolfie Blass, and was escaped from East Germany to Australia, and made his name basically selling wine at race courses, where he used to use the old cards, you know, where they had red for 10 to 1, yellow for 4 to 1, and black as evens, I think it was, or the best, you know, a favourite. So that's what this is. It's very well-made wine from Australia. Very well. I'm glad to see it's been well stored and kept. You will enjoy it and love it. But it's still available today. It's still out there in the market in that kind of 26 to 30 pound category. And even if it was, you know, no matter how the thing was stored, you're really looking at those kind of prices.
Yeah.
Plus, you can't, it's very hard to sell a single bottle of wine.
Indeed.
But it's something lovely to enjoy.
James has a similar thing. He says he's got a 1.5 litre bottle of 2009 Spätburgunder. Also got Ingelheimer Rheinhohn on the label. It was a gift some years ago. Is it any good? Is it still okay to drink? And how long would it last? As I can't drink 1.5 litres in one sitting, says James, who's obviously a lightweight.
Yeah. Lightweight. It won't last too long, but you're looking at German wines having just improved at around about that time, and so you're looking at better quality wines at that point. Single individual high volume, 1.5 litre bottling like that is strange, and strange to see how it got to Ireland. To be honest, I would enjoy. I think if we've waited this long, I wouldn't open it now when the opportunity to have more than two or three people around you is evaporating in front of us, if you know what I mean. I think it could last another few. If it's lasted this long, it should last another few months, and then have a little try of it. You're looking at slightly lighter wine there. You're looking at a medium bodied sort of wine. I think I would hang on to it until after the summer and have a little try there. It could be disappointing. I've had a few older, not too well stored wines of similar provenance and age, and they have been a little underwhelming.
Okay, so yes, a word to the wise there. Right, our hashtag is Sinful Movies. The sheets smell of excess. We have to take a break. Back in a couple of minutes. 53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cents. Tomás Clancy and Esther McCarthy are still with us. We've already spoken about Four Kids in It on Sky and one lovely wine from Tomás. Very serious question for you though, Tomás. I have loads of wine left over from a wedding I'm no longer having. I'm a victim of the Corona cancellation. I need to get rid of it because there's a risk I will just drink my way through it and my Corona depression. Would shops buy it back in bulk?
Well, the answer is it depends on who you bought it from. And I would be... So the answer is yes. Most places that you buy wine from, and I would hope, from reasonable vendors, they have a sale or return policy. And in fact, mostly whenever I'm sort of asked by people, I always say, make sure that's what you do. That's one of the bit bargaining chips you have when you're looking at getting a wedding to cater it. You say, well, can we buy this on a sale or return basis? We know we'll use 10 cases, but we might use 15 or 20, etc. And so I'd be very surprised if you don't have, if there isn't a relationship like that. So I'd really like to know a little bit more about that. Wine, where you just turn up on somebody's front door, where you didn't buy it off them, they're not going to buy it back off you. So it's really about turning up to a place that you actually bought it from, or maybe the hotel or the restaurant that you had it in, and say, would you be interested in this wine? But to be honest, it's about getting back to the people that you bought it from and looking for reasonableness from them. On the other hand, look at how far ahead you are of everyone else. Getting wine now is all about trying to do it in a risk-free, healthy and safe manner for everybody, both the vendor and the purchaser. And you're one step ahead. You've got the wine in your house. And so I would think that if you look upon this as having wisely accumulated for the future that we didn't know was coming, pat yourself on the back and take out one or two bottles a week every so often. You could see yourself, you could see this as a real advantage and take advantage of it rather than try and offload it and be back in the same position as the rest of us looking to buy a bottle or two here or there.
Yeah. Ashing says, honestly, seriously, if I ever win the lottery, I'm going to pay Tomás Clancy to talk to me about wine all day. He has the most incredible voice. It puts me in a trance, she says. Anyway, Tomás, back to your day job. What's the second wine today?
Well, God bless her. Thank you very much, Sean. The second wine today is from the high plateau of Ribera del Duero. And it's basically, if you're looking at Spain from above and you see Madrid right there in the bullseye in the centre of Spain, you draw a line straight up to where 12 o'clock is, travel up about 100, 150 kilometres north of Spain, and you're travelling very high, very quickly. And you're up in this you're higher than Carrantool by another 300 metres. So it's really high up. And they're growing grapes up there. They're growing grapes at this height because, of course, it's extremely hot during the day. But at night,
wham, there's no clouds, no protection, and it goes down to freezing. So that's called a diurnal shift, the change in temperature, and it's a place that you get great wine from. So the wine that we're looking at, the second wine, is called Bodega Condado de Jaca, and it's from the DO of Ribera del Duero, and it's available from Huilhan's Wines. Well, it's actually widely available, but this one is available, the 2016, at €25 from Huilhan's Wines. Very good, very well priced. And they are a fantastic wine shop, which I've awarded Best Wine of Shop of the Year for the last two or three years in the Business Post. And they are out in Loughlinstown, and they're offering a zero-contact process, just like terroirs we talked about a minute ago, except their one is slightly different. Theirs is a drive-through, because they're off the road, and you can drive through and you've ordered the one bottle. They'll come out with the bottle and they'll put it into the back of the car, exactly the same as terroirs, and you drive away again. But it's a kind of, they've got a big car park, and now the car park has been set up to do this process.
Whereas, that's very clever.
It's very clever. Yeah. It's a very nice thing to do, and they'll be improving as they move forward. Terroirs have been a car
park. Now, if you turn up in your car 2 hours later, they won't serve you again, just to warn you.
Exactly. And you've got to ring in, you've got to ring in advance, be nice, and pay and pick the thing up. Terroirs is excellent because you're getting it on the way out, and you're pulling it in on the Donnybrook Jill carriageway, and they've got a little car park at the back of it. But again, as I said, their service, they're offering a delivery service as well, that adds on a free delivery for Dublin 4 and 6. So back to Bodega Condado de Jaca. We're out in Loughlinstown, Huilhan's Wines, and you've driven in. And what are they giving you? They're giving you this brilliant bottle of wine made from Tempranillo. And it's one of these strange bottles of wine that brings up the oddness and connections in the world. And here's an odd connection between Franco and De Valera. Both Franco and De Valera were spurned by the UN because of our approach to World War II, our independent approach to World War II and our neutrality. They didn't have the same problems with other countries that did this, he quickly hastens to add. But anyway, as a result of this, we were also kept out of the EU for a very long time. And we managed to get in with Britain. Obviously, they're leaving now. And when we arrived, we dug in. But the British did too. And when the Spanish decided to join the European Union, well, they had Britain sitting there going, yes, but you're state aiding your sugar beet business, and we don't want you to do that, because we have we want an open market, a flat market that allows ease and smoothness for all across the EU. And basically, they had Tate and Lyle, which is bringing in sugarcane from their colonies or former colonies. And basically, that was one of the conditions. Spain couldn't get in unless they cut subsidising the beet production. And as you might guess, that beet production was mainly the big farming that was going on up in Ribera del Duero.
I'm sorry, Tomás, yes, but I'm running out of time a wee bit, so I'm going to cut across.
You're going to have to stop that story and say, thank God they decided to change to wine, and I have made this beautiful wine instead. And it is a fantastic wine at a good price.
Right. We'll move on to our next movie. It is Free Solo. It's available on Disney Plus. Here's a clip.
The piece that I've always worried about the most is the crux, the hardest part. To get past the crux, you have to climb either the boulder problem or the Teflon corner, 2,000 feet off the ground, each of which I've fallen off many times with a rope. The Teflon corner is basically like a 90 degree corner of glass, which is ultra slippery. It just fills me with terror. Pushing against the two walls of it with my feet on glass, my palms on glass, and trying to make these little micro adjustments to keep my balance centered so that I can push evenly on all four sides of it. And then I imagine 2,500 feet of air beneath my feet. You're like, that's just a crazy thing to think about.
There you go. That's a Free Solo. It's available on Disney Plus. So I'm sorry, Esther, we've only about a minute to talk about this. You're only allowed used adjectives.
Okay. he was talking about the boulder problem there, where he actually has to karate kick himself across an open space 2,000 feet up in order to secure his next bit of foothold. This guy is crazy, but it's a very entertaining documentary. They actually do an MRI scan on before he goes to climb this notorious mountain without a rope, and they find that the amygdala, the grey matter that triggers fear in his in the brain in normal people, is not triggered in his brain when presented with stressful or frightening situations. So he's literally wired differently to the rest of us. It's beautifully shot. It's an achievement in itself how they filmed it, because you're looking down with him most of the time, and they used kind of the latest technology to achieve that, including drone cameras, high-tech zoom lenses. The zoom photographer on the ground keeps wincing and looking away. He felt like me. He can't even look. And that's really clever. And literally, though, they had four cameramen who were mountaineers as well, because they had to get rigs. Now, they used ropes. They weren't complete lunatics, but they have to get rigs and get those very heavy camera and sound equipment up the mountain with him, and go to some risk themselves so that you're front and centre with them.
That is hard work.
Every moment of this documentary.
Esther and Tomas, thank you both very much. Whoever it was, you can answer your phone now. I think I heard something ringing there in the background. Our production team today, Claire Collins, Anne Kane, Simon Tiernan. This is live radio, folks. Philip Kelly and Aisling O'Reilly. Ivan's up next on News Talk. While we were on air, actually, we just heard the very sad news. And I suppose it's some comfort. This is not connected to COVID-19, that the great singer Bill Withers passed away. Have a lovely weekend.
It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, I wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. This house just ain't no home anytime she goes away. And I know, I know. Sunshine when she's gone, only darkness every day.
And action. Movies and Booze on Moncrief,
brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.